guess there's a team going to the Super Bowl, right?
I don't know. Go sports ball.
Oh, don't do the sports ball thing. Everybody does this. The sports ball thing.
Seahawks.
Yes, the Seahawks. I hope they lose or something. Okay, Mike.
Are going to come after us with pitchforks and torches for that, Mike. You got to be careful.
Well, no. Here's the thing. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. You can give us a call anytime this hour if you got one in you. But here's the thing. A lot of people get all weird and superstitious when it comes to sports. So,
oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think what we can do to sort of break the superstition and just say that maybe the Seahawks might win because they're good this year. They're going to lose. I don't like them. La, 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 la. They're all terrible. I don't know. Is there something I can do that's superstitious? Give me a call. Let me know. But we're talking about this because there's a news story we're talking about. This comes to us from the USA Today. Half of Americans think magic will decide the Super Bowl. According to a recent poll by the Public Religion Research Institute, half of your neighbors believe that supernatural forces will influence the Super Bowl. A quarter of those polled say that their favorite sports team has been the victim of a curse. Another 26% have prayed to God on behalf of their team. 19% believe that God's will is a deciding factor in the game's outcome, and even 22% of religiously unaffiliated Americans believe that God rewards athletes who have faith.
I can't think of a reason why God would care. Like, aren't there better things?
Yeah.
There's more stuff on his to-do list than reward athletes who have faith, like maybe curing babies with cancer.
But yeah. Then, you know, that's the stuff that privileged people in the first world won't care about. I'm sorry.
Good point.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, just let that kid with the flies on him starve a little bit longer. Go Seahawks!
Okay, so that's Texas football, talking about Seahawks. I like it. This is... Really? Superstition? I get it. You know, it's... Actually, have you watched ESPN 14 or whatever they're up to now?
The high numbers are the best ones.
Yeah.
That's where you get, like, Magic the Gathering tournaments and American Sumo.
Actually, even the regular ESPN, it stops looking like sports after a while, and it starts looking like some sort of crazy religious rite. I mean, they keep putting on these weird hats and saying these weird things and doing these little dances because it's something that they do in sports. And it's really strange to me.
And there's Tim Tebow.
And
that's still
Tim
a
Tebow.
Thing, or yeah. Am I 5 years too late?
I don't even think he's playing anymore.
I think he's playing, but he's just not notable anymore. So much for, you know, God rewarding athletes of faith.
I'm pretty sure he was dropped. I'll check in the break.
If any of the three of us knew anything about sports, one of us would know this by now.
Hey, I know stuff about sports, just not this one.
I don't get it, because on paper, the idea of a grown giant men in plastic armor hitting each other, that should be really interesting to me.
It should.
Yeah,
it's actually,
why is that not
that
your
way?
Failure of execution.
Plus, they wear tight pants.
Yeah.
That's not really in my demographic. But.
Yeah, but it seems like this would be your guys' sport. I don't know. I don't know.
I just think it's kind of funny, because you talk about this superstition that goes hand in hand with religious, I guess, fervor for sports, is that I know people, even in the atheist skeptic community, who go through little rituals as a way of getting ready for a team. Like, this is the scarf I wear. This is the socks that I wear. And one of our friends, a mutual friend of both of ours, who's a big sports fan, I asked him about that, and he goes, you know, I do it, and it's fun to do it. But and then I stop and tell myself, you know I'm just playing around there. But then on those off moments, I go, oh, wait, I forgot to wear those socks. And then he stops himself. So it's a constant tug of war.
I've done the rally cap thing. I'm a Cubs fan. My sport is baseball. Yeah, sometimes I've actually thought that the Cubs are cursed. 104 years. So I used to think that maybe something was wrong with it, and then I thought about it for a second. It's like, is this something that God would ever, that any supernatural force would ever care about?
Yeah, so I just...
God's a Yankees fan.
Yeah.
On the big list of things that deities could give a crud about, sports just has to be...
God has an East Coast bias.
I always knew it.
Yeah, you knew it.
It's again, if there is... a god, there's probably not.
All right, let me ask you guys something.
If there, and this is the thing that this god cares about, why would this be a god that you'd want to worship?
Yeah, that's true. But let me ask you something on your social medias now, since you did the sports ball thing. Are you seeing more people say they don't like football than you are people who are actually saying they like football?
No.
Because that's
opposite.
What I'm seeing.
You know, I'm seeing way more people just obsessing over the Seahawks.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because... My it, it on my from my Facebook page, it would look like the football fans are like the small group of people in the enclave, and the sports ball people are the zombies around them rather than the other way around. Oh. Where if I go outside, it's obviously that's not the case. But
yeah, the entire region is like wallpapered with 12 flags right now.
I need to set up a Facebook page where I take a picture of like the Ultimate Warrior as he is now and say I'm really in, like I'm a GOP guy, and just so I can get out of my social media bubble.
Take the Ultimate Warrior's face paint and make it blue, green,
stuff
and white.
Like that. Yeah. In other news, this has been a big week for marriage, as you might imagine, with the stuff going on in Oklahoma. But we're going to start with talking about California. A ballot measure would make premarital counseling mandatory. A California-based group called Kids Against Divorce is gathering signatures in Colorado for a ballot measure that would require anyone wishing to be married in the state first attend mandatory counseling sessions. For a first-time marriage, you would be required to take 10 hours worth of counseling. For a second marriage, 20 hours. For a third, 30 hours. Little is known of Kids Against Divorce, whose website is vague about the group's philosophy and affiliations. The group will need to gather more than 80,000 signatures to have this measure appear on the November 2014 ballot.
I have all kinds of feelings about this one.
I'll let you start.
Well, first of all, just speaking as somebody who got married once, got divorced, and then got married a second time, why on earth should I require more counseling the second time around? I feel like I actually learned a lot and made a much wiser decision with round two.
In my case, it's exactly the same. The first time out, I stank at it. I learned a lot, and I'm actually doing much better this time.
Yeah, this time, much more careful about selecting who you settle down with.
Yeah.
Considering everything in terms of a legal contract instead of just, I'm in love, you know?
Exactly.
It was a whole different bag that time around. And then also, just like... on the surface, I don't see a problem with mandatory counseling, but I can just see how this is seething with all kinds of religious weirdness right under the surface.
Well, I do see a problem even on the surface, but I'd say the attitude that is very telling in a measure like this is the fact that they are treating it as if this is recidivism rather than a social measure that, this person went back to jail again. So this is someone that we need to give further counseling to because they really don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that obviously this is an out-of-state group. I've been to the Kids Against Divorce website, not run by kids, though their website kind of looks like it is.
Yeah.
And the fact that I see them being so cagey, what to me this feels like is the intelligent design movement, where it's a religiously motivated group that clearly has a desire and to get their sort of religious claws into things.
Yeah,
but they're savvy enough to know to not do it outright.
I've got money on this. I think it's going to be a Christian group that comes out.
Undoubtedly.
There's no evidence for that right now. Nobody knows who they are.
Pure speculation.
This is pure speculation, but I bet you it's going to be a Christian group.
Well,
the proof is in the pudding there. Look at the name. Kids Against Divorce. First of all, they're acting like divorce is the worst thing that could ever happen.
Yeah.
In the case of both my parents' divorce and my own divorce, it was the best thing that happened to me in my life.
Yeah.
And also, they're making this stupid assumption that marriage always equals kids. Obviously, that's not true.
Well, here's the thing. You think Mike, you think it's a bad idea even on the surface.
Yes.
If you were required to take a long, hard look at what marriage is before you actually walked into it, might that not prevent you from getting in crummy marriages in the first place?
Well, I think that the fact is that people don't just run in on a whim. The Vegas model of the Britney Spears marriage...
You're wrong.
No, I'm just saying that it's not like... That's not the overwhelming majority of people, I would say.
I disagree, actually. Yeah. As somebody who ran into a marriage on a whim.
The same. Yeah. Sorry, you're surrounded by two people who did exactly that.
Yeah, but again, this is a self-selecting group.
Yeah, again, that's true. It is a self-selecting group.
Just happen to be the weird, single misanthrope that didn't get married even once.
Right.
But I don't think that most people who get married, and you know what? So what? They get a divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That can be messy, but you know what? It's their mess to clean up.
But I don't think you should characterize it as the Britney Spears marriage. That's clearly an outlier. That's a boundary condition. In the middle, we've got people who just don't really understand what living is, what being a responsible adult is, and even in their 20s and 30s, and maybe the chance to take a good look at that, and like, this is someone who's going to be in your business for as long as you guys are together, that could be a good idea. I'm loath to say I'm for the idea because it's going to be religious people.
Yeah.
Most people are going to get religious counseling, and that's going to be crap. But it seems like being required to do something like that might not be horrible on its face.
Well, here's the thing, is under that superficial layer, which again, this is a red herring, is the fact that I could see organizations that are overtly religious, you know, swarming. It's like with radio licenses. The minute it opens up, it's churches, 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 churches.
Absolutely.
They buy everything
up.
So it becomes impossible to get other messages out there.
Right.
This is
going to
be the same thing. Once a counselor thing opens up and there's money in mandatory counseling, these people are going to go in there, and some of them, who are many of whom are going to be anti-gay, are going to try to un-gay people or try to convince them not to get married or to try to force stuff on them. And it's really, the fact is, some people, they have thought about this. They do know what it is. And you're basically saying they still have to take 10 hours of classes.
But I guess, let's get to the philosophy behind it. Clearly, this is going to be religious. This is going to be religious. People are going to be all over it. There's going to be a huge, establishment clause problems with this. I am not challenging that at all.
Hmm.
But let's talk about the philosophy behind it. What do you think about it?
I think if it was purely just legal counseling, I think it would be a great idea, like you said, but everything seems wrong with just assuming that you have to, like, save people from a divorce, which is what it's kids against divorce. First of all, the philosophy of assuming that, like, the divorce is the worst thing that could conceivably happen to anybody, especially to children, is ridiculous.
Often it's the best.
Yeah. And second, just assuming that, like, all marriages that happen are going to involve children at some point is completely stupid.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely false, and that really tips the hand of who's behind this. It has to be religious groups that view marriage as baby-producing, you know, units, essentially.
And you've made your own prediction. I'm going to put chips down on this as a conservative Catholic group.
Okay.
Because of the anti-divorce angle, that these are people that want to get rid of no-fault divorce. These are people who want to get... They have a little message at the bottom of their thing saying, we think marriage should be allowed for, you know, divorce should be allowed in the case of domestic violence. So that's a pretty specific thing. You mean not in those other cases? This comes across like people that, like with the Catholic Church, trying to prevent the, you know, legalization of divorce in places like Ireland and Malta.
Right.
This seems like such a group that realizes that the social winds are changing.
Right.
And they think that they can try to, through deceptive, vague language, get something in there that they can try to do to basically try to, on the step to, in their mind, try to make divorce illegal. But the beautiful thing about this, though, is that it's not going to fly. The same way as, like, the Prohibition Party really isn't around anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, again, when you try to take somebody's beer away, they're going to get angry. And in this case, even if the goal is to go after, you know, gays or about, you know, anything, or divorce or anything like that, in the end, you're going to even get a lot of religious people that are going to say, you really want to create this much of a hassle for me? That the hassle is a bigger headache to them than any religious beliefs they may have.
This is one of those things where I'm for it philosophically, but I would never vote for it on a ballot because I know the social load that's going to come with it.
Exactly.
I think
Trojan horse.
It's completely a Trojan horse. But I think philosophically, I think if people were given a chance to say, hey, look, there's legal consequences to what you're doing. You shouldn't be doing this just because you love somebody. You know, you need to see that this person is going to become a part of your life permanently. Even if you get divorced, this is something you have to think about. I think that would be okay. Does it require 10 hours for the first one, 20 hours for the second one? No, I think that's silly. Maybe make them read a pamphlet and take a quiz would be enough.
Yeah.
But I don't even see divorce as a problem. I just think people don't. I think people have a tendency to jump into marriage because they really care about the person they're with at the time, and damn the consequences. And that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree.
To the degree I will agree with you on that level, that I think people should take these decisions more seriously.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with people taking these sorts of counseling classes and things like that and getting prepared for what their life is going to be and how it'll change.
Yeah.
It's a question of it being mandatory that I'm against.
I think if marriage is going to be a government thing, I think a pamphlet and a quiz, like I said, might not be a terrible idea. And we'll get to that in a moment. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to have Mike's favorite story ever.
Charles Darwin is turning 205 years old. Seattle Atheists and Camp Quest Northwest are teaming up to celebrate with a day of games and interactive science crafts. See fossils older than the dinosaurs. Teens and adults, test your knowledge by competing in Evolution Jeopardy. Kids get their very own science activity room. Go to meetup.com/Seattle Atheists for more information and to register your kids. See you on Sunday, February 9th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the 2100 building in the Rainier neighborhood of Seattle.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview, informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Now, I said before we went into the break that I think, you know, pamphlet and quiz, 10, 20, 30 hours of training, you know, of how to be married, that's stupid. But a pamphlet and a quiz is okay. That said, I really don't think divorce is that big of a deal.
I don't either. I think that oftentimes it's the best option, not just for situations where there's abuse of some kind, but the fact that you have one life and it makes absolutely no sense to spend it being unhappy on purpose.
Yeah.
I don't think humans are meant to be monogamous anyway, so...
That's interesting. I don't know if we're meant to be anything in that respect. I think there's probably just there's a range just with everything else.
Yeah, could be. I just think expecting people to remain with one partner for the entirety of their life is expecting too much for most people.
Yeah, and I would even go so far as to say is that's a great way to control people too. It's, you know, as a TV giver before with the Catholic Church in charge of Europe, you couldn't get divorces, and there was one way they could lead people around.
Exactly. Yeah. Why do you think that in large part, why do you think that law or that rule still exists in Catholicism? It's because if you control people's sexuality, you control people.
Yeah.
And much. Remember, it wasn't until the Clinton administration, because of the Catholic Church, that Ireland did not have divorce. They didn't even allow contraception.
That's true.
I mean, this is the sort of power it has in places all over over Europe. I mean, they're tiny little holdouts now, but it's amazing how much power they're trying to reassert through these underhanded sort of ways.
And speaking of underhanded sort of ways, I love this
next
story.
Was that a euphemism?
Maybe. and there may be lots of more euphemisms coming up. An Oklahoma lawmaker considers banning marriage for everyone. Oklahoma State Representative Mike Turner, a Republican from Edmond. Hey, that's where we had the Oklahoma City show. It was actually in Edmond. It was in his backyard. Has filed a bill that would eliminate state regulation of marriage. Turner proposed the bill as a way to comply with the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution while still preventing same-sex couples from legally marrying. It would leave all adults without the ability to be legally wed in the state. Oklahoma's ban on same-sex marriage was ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge on January 14th. The issue now heads to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver. Do it!
Go for it. I just talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, does it really matter this much to this guy that gays can't get married?
Taking the ball and going.
Cutting off your nose to spite the gays.
Yeah. Wow.
It's amazing because what a giant baby.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, if I can't win, then I'm going to go home and I'm going to take my game with me.
Yeah, and I'm going to take my ball and go home. It's horrible.
It's hilarious, though.
It's hilarious, and it's horrible, and I want to see these people, these politicians who are trying to prevent people from having equal rights, because this will crater their political careers.
Oh, I love it. I love it because this is a situation where you have people who have smaller and smaller space in which they can make these legal arguments.
Yeah.
Because there's more and more legal precedent that's swinging in favor of equal rights. And so all they have to do is actually do this scorched earth policy to try to nuke marriage from orbit just to prevent gay people from being able to share in it. That's hilarious because that's the thing that will turn everyone else on them. There's that level to which they can say these offensive things. And once you cross that line and you start saying, I'm going to hurt everybody to hurt gay people, then you just become this joke. And I welcome them becoming jokes.
Yeah, go for it. They clearly are just about to head right over the edge of the waterfall, and I am fine with that. Just enjoy the trip down, guys.
Becky brought up a very interesting perspective on this. She suggested that, or I think she looked around, and Oklahoma has a sodomy law and a sex outside of marriage law. That stuff is illegal. So that,
wasn't that thrown out in 2003? The Supreme Court, the sodomy law, definitely.
It's technically those laws aren't constitutional.
Lawrence v. Texas.
But they're still on the books, which means if Oklahoma's going to pass a law banning that, then suddenly everybody in Oklahoma is breaking. Well, not everybody in Oklahoma, but every married person in Oklahoma is now a criminal.
The classic catch-22.
Only criminals get married.
That's the thing, is when you talk to these preachers who rail against premarital sex when nobody's married.
Yeah, I know.
But are you going to literally take all of these tax benefits away from everyone in the state?
I think that's what they're going for. I really do.
How is that not suicide politically? Why don't you just go out there and say, you know what? I like Nazis and murder. Oh, I mean, that's pretty much as popular as you're going to be for doing something like that.
Ooh, indeed.
You know, Mussolini had a point, kids. That's really what he's saying.
Well, the other thing is, I think this is really the direction marriage should go. I really don't understand why the government has to care about who I'm married to. It doesn't seem like data they really need.
Yeah, I don't really... I agree with you, you know, philosophically, but I'm not going to complain about the tax break. So.
That's the thing, though, is that it's a question of being able to, in a legal way where nobody can deny you this,
right,
be able to have a legal contract with somebody else to share in their life, to share in their benefits, to share in the finances, mm-hmm, and to share in the sort of end of life or big decision, life-changing decisions.
But we have something like that, which would serve that need quite nicely, which is corporate law.
Yeah, but why do you need to basically use that when there's a lot more legal precedent around the concept of marriage?
Because that legal precedent around the concept of marriage includes a lot of you can't do this and you can't do that, and it seems like it'd be a neat way around it. I don't know. It's just something I thought of. Again, this is one of those things where I think this is a Trojan horse for something, but philosophically, I'm not certain I disagree. And completely. I don't think marriage should be a civil thing at all. I think it should, you know, I think you should, if you have insurance and you want somebody else to be on your plan, just do it. I don't think we need to have these weird conflicts.
I'm fine with marriage as an institution that we look at civilly. I don't think that government should have any role in policing how I do my marriage.
Right.
Or making any laws about what I can or cannot do with my spouse, as long as I'm not hurting or oppressing anybody. But, you know, I like having those sorts of protections there. So in the event I have an employer who's not so enlightened, or or a hospital that's not so enlightened, I can throw this thing down in a call from a lawyer, and that situation's done.
It seems like, though, these laws have been used to enforce these inequalities just as much as they've been used to enforce them. It seems like it could go either way.
But that's the case with any law. But again, the change of the interpretation of it is changing with the social attitudes.
It's something I think about. I'm applauding that, of course, but it's something I wonder about. Now, are you ready, Mike, for this? This is a new story for you.
Okay.
From our friend Rosalind.
Brace yourselves.
Pope's doves attacked. Two white doves that were released as a peace gesture by children standing alongside Pope Francis in St. Peter's Square were attacked by a seagull and a large black crow. One dove lost some feathers as it broke free from the gull, but the crow pecked repeatedly at the other dove. It was not clear what happened to the doves as they flew off.
So it got away from the crow?
Apparently it got away from
that
the crow.
That is a vicious... Were the crow and the seagull working together?
They teamed up.
They were ready for that. They just hated doves.
First time in avian history, seagulls and crows found a reason to cooperate. And by the way, you have to see the pictures for this.
Oh, really?
It is unbelievable. Like, this poor dove is like, just freaking out.
So I'm guessing
clearly
that the
vicious crow is like right on its tail, and the seagull is like wingman, no pun intended, just like waiting for the dove to dodge so it can swoop in and get it. It's so great. I'm going to make it my desktop for my computer.
The seagull's got to be the henchman in this case. I mean, the crow is a smaller bird, but it's also meaner and smarter, where the seagull's pretty dumb.
Yeah, gulls aren't smart enough to put this plot together on
this
their
own. This is the crow. He's like the Joe Pesci of this.
We actually have a bird expert here, so tell us about the social interaction. Like, how do you think this went down?
Well, it is actually, honestly, it's a little surprising that a gull and a crow decided to chase the same birds at the same time. Gulls and crows are both very territorial, and they like to do what's called mobbing against other birds who come into their territory, and sometimes humans, so they freak out and scream and fly at you and drive you away, and they will, like, you know, grab another bird's feathers and get really aggressive if they need to, but they have their own, they have, like, their airspace, and if you intrude, stuff's going to go down, you know? But what's surprising is that gulls and crows are collaborating to attack the Pope's doves, because typically gulls and crows are pretty standoffish with one another unless there's, like, food involved, and then they might sort of chase each other. But usually they stay away from each other and they don't share territories. So they really are not cool with the Pope, these two birds.
So what was the Pope doing with these doves flying up? Is this like a John Woo thing? He's walking up with the birds coming up behind him?
Dramatic effect.
He's going to pull out two handguns and shoot at the obelisk? I mean,
what if it's like some elaborate Dr. Doolittle assassination attempt here?
Oh, jeez.
Maybe the birds will be in a little, you know, Pope Mobile from then on.
You're thinking, I can see the screenplay light going on in your head.
There's a third bird that didn't get out of the cage in time, and that was supposed to make it for the Pope.
Oh, I remember there actually was a time a few years ago when the previous Pope, the one that looked like Emperor Palpatine, released a dove, and there's some really great pictures of the dove, like, flies out from, you know, the fancy Pope balcony, and a gull swoops in and starts harassing it, and the dove, like, panics and flies back in to where the Pope is. Mm. It's like, get me out of here, so it just sort of retreated. No peace today, I guess.
So the gulls have tried this before.
Peace is being recalled.
This is clearly... This is a second attempt.
So is this like a Groundhog Day thing?
It's a gull conspiracy.
The doves got attacked and nearly murdered, so we have six more weeks of warfare.
Well, if it's a gull and a crow. Well, if the group is a gull and a crow, it's only attempted murder.
Yeah, okay.
That is the best pun you will ever hear.
Oh.
I don't know about that.
Boo.
Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Somebody call and tell Mike just what you think of that pun.
Or
tell
amazing.
Him what I think of that pun.
You were privileged to hear it.
All right, let's do some emails. We got Christian from Calgary, who writes, a vlog by an English expat living in Japan verified they do indeed go to KFC for Christmas. It's a tradition that started there in, I think, the 80s.
Yes.
However, whereas it used to be a bucket of fried chicken, KFC actually has a premium Christmas menu that gets trotted out once a year. On that, you will find several different kinds of chicken. A roast chicken, a whole one, spicy chicken, chicken breast, and wine sauce. And they come with premium sides, too. As the guy making the video says, they're quite tasty, not just tasty for fast food, but legit well done. Also, it's so popular that people pre-order their meals months in advance.
Oh my god, it's the honey-baked ham of Japan.
It is a big deal. I know that. I've heard that more than once.
How did I miss this? This is
That's
amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Specifically KFC.
Specifically KFC.
But they have... I want to go spend Christmas in Japan now.
Yeah.
But it's like magical KFC, because Japan is wonderful, because I just love Japan because they're the only one that have like celery flavored Pepsi.
Yeah.
All these flavors of things that we don't get over here.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of wonderful stuff in Japan.
I heard in the Soviet Union, and I do mean the Soviet Union.
In Soviet Union.
garlic was a ice cream flavor, which to me, like, everybody was like, oh, they have garlic ice cream. And I'm like, really? Garlic ice cream? I want this.
Are you pregnant?
Awesome.
I actually had garlic ice cream once, and it was pretty good.
It was.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
It wasn't like super potent garlicky flavor. You just had a little hint of
garlic
in there. It was good. I liked it.
Okay.
I hear in North Korea, they have food that tastes like matter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, there's that pizza ad.
Oh
man,
North Korea.
This was from years ago. They opened up a pizzeria in Pyongyang, and they made a commercial for it, and they released it on their YouTube page. North Korea has a YouTube page. Don't go to it; it's boring. It's like, we make real Italian pizza, da, 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 and here are all these wonderful ingredients. And I thought maybe the camera was just washed out, but no, there's like this gray mass of vegetables and this slightly grayish sauce for the pizza. It looked like
food made by people who don't know what food looks like.
Yeah, it was really sad. It was really disturbing.
I believe they knead tears into the dough.
Oh, boy. Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We have another email, Bob from Mars. Okay, he writes, Sam made an interesting argument regarding his son's public school secular winter holiday concert held at a church. He said something to the effect of, imagine this is your kid, who you're raising as an atheist, who's being subjected to Christian rhetoric during his time when he's supposed to be at public school function. I don't think that's a little thing, I think that requires action. Now, I completely agree with the stance that he's taking here. However, I think it should be pointed out that if you reversed atheist and Christian in that statement, you basically have the Christian party line against teaching evolution in schools. Just a thought.
Well, let's actually do that. Let's take what you said, Sam, and reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he says, imagine this is your kid who you're raising as a Christian, who's being subjected to atheist rhetoric during a time that he's supposed to be in public school function. I don't think that's a little thing. I think that requires action. Okay, that would be just as bad of a thing if they were overtly pushing atheist stuff in a public school, taking a religious stance. But when you teach evolution, that's not what you're doing. You are teaching science based on the evidence, using science to teach science.
Right.
Just because it doesn't jive with your religious beliefs is a fault of your religion, not of the science.
I agree completely.
I have nothing to add to that. Spot on.
That's the problem, is that they can take this stance, and that's fine. They can say that teaching evolution is atheist rhetoric, but it's not. This is verifiable. There's evidence. Evolution is one of the most provable theories in science. It's a big deal. It's important to medicine. It's important to so many things. I can go on about this forever.
Cornerstone of biology.
There are plenty of Christian scientists who fully believe in it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Christians who are scientists,
Right. Not people from Christian science as a thing.
They don't believe in the medicine part of science.
Right.
Yeah. So if they say, evolution in schools, they talk about evolution in schools, that's education. If they start having field trips to the American Atheists Convention.
Exactly.
Now we have a problem, and I would not be in favor of that.
No.
Yeah. Or American Atheist pamphlets at a school function. Just the inverse of this, but with atheism-related stuff rather than Christian-related stuff, I would be against that, and I would support anybody who would go to court over that. Just show me where that happens.
But this is, again, the question of Christian privilege in this country.
Yeah.
They're so used to having such a dominance, over the culture, over the way things are taught in schools, over the way the president talks, that just not having somebody, bend down and kiss their feet constantly, like having the president with any disaster, maybe a plane crash, a former first lady dies, he gets a hangnail, they expect him, the
going
president.
To the Super Bowl.
Again, the Super Bowl, no matter what the situation, they expect the president to mention God, 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 whether it's relevant or not. And if they don't mention it as part of a completely unrelated topic, they act as if they have been, like, loaded on a cattle cart. It is insane.
Just check out the State of the Union address coming up. I mean, you're going to see more than one reference.
Yeah, President Obama mentioned that we existed. That is as far as he's gone, as far as atheist rhetoric.
And then we got that email saying, is Obama the first atheist president like Bill Clinton was the first gay president? No.
If the bar was that low, people would be constantly tripping over it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just acknowledging we exist as part of a list of all these other groups.
Yeah.
Sick. That's insane how low that bar is.
Okay, guys, get ready. Nicole from the internet asks us a question. Please respond. Can you give me a couple of reasons why you don't think God exists and the Bible isn't true? Oh. Mike.
There's no evidence to support that. That's why is the Bible not true? Well, for one, that's as far as supernatural claims go, the Bible's full of them. It's got talking animals, talking serpents. It says that a bat is a bird. It talks about a global flood that has never been shown to happen. And I'm sorry, it just doesn't hold water. It doesn't understand even the most basic things about science, that if a book was written by the ineffable, all-powerful, omnipotent, omniscient ruler of the universe, this would be a much better book.
Libby for the block.
Nicole, exactly the same reason why you do not believe Osiris exists and why you do not believe the Book of the Dead is true.
Very good. This is Ask an Atheist 253-584-1480. I don't believe in it because it's provably false. In a minute, we're going to talk about a big, big story with a lot of weirdness hanging off of it.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Billy!
Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we have a call. This is Michael from Tacoma. How you doing today?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing really good. What do you got for us?
Well, I just want to call and tell you that this is my second time calling in. I don't really have a comment on anything. I just want to let you guys know that I think you should keep up the good work. It's very, very refreshing to hear you. Every now and then I stumble onto 1180, and I did today as I'm out doing my errands and whatnot, and I just must say, keep up the good work, you guys. We need different voices. We need different perspectives, and all of the religious zealots, well, they're zealots, you know?
Yeah.
No reason, no rhyme. It's nonsense, most of it. And so good. I just want to give you a attaboy and attagirl. Stay on it.
Thank you very
Thanks,
much, Michael.
That's
okay, bye.
Bye-bye. That's really nice.
Yeah.
That's not something that happens as often as I'd like, maybe. I don't know. all right, this is the story everybody's heard about, and it's got some weird angles to it that I'd really like to get into. This is the lady who died. And I'll just get into the story. Texas State District Judge R.H. Wallace ruled on Friday that a Fort Worth hospital was misapplying a controversial law by refusing to remove Marlise Munoz's body from life support. Munoz was 14 weeks pregnant in November when her husband found her unconscious. She later was declared brain dead, the legal definition of deceased under Texas law, but the hospital argued that it was bound by another Texas law that says life-sustaining treatment cannot be withdrawn from a pregnant patient. Judge Wallace ruled that the law did not apply to Mrs. Munoz, since a dead person can no longer be considered a patient. Adding to the saga were medical reports that Munoz's fetus was not viable. Hospital staff removed support from Ms. Munoz's body on Sunday morning. So, just today. There is, again, a lot of horrible... There's two things here. There's the Trojan horse thing, and then there's the philosophy behind it. And I go two different ways on this one. But let's talk about the Trojan horse thing first. This law has a very specific intent.
Yeah, this law seems, on the face at least, I don't know all the, you know, backstory behind it or whatever, but it certainly seems to have the end result, if you carry it far enough, of just turning women into nothing more than incubators for fetuses.
Yeah.
Which, clearly, I have a problem with that. I think most reasonable people do. But that's kind of the Trojan horse aspect that people are concerned about, or the slippery slope, that if you sustain a person who is legally dead, who will not recover, just to basically make sure that she carries a fetus to term, then you can basically justify turning a fully conscious and completely legally alive woman into something who is forced to just carry a fetus to term.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a coincidence. I mean, you see this around the country. The pro-life movement has been very, very active in doing little things to try to create legal precedent, passing laws to give, you know, driver's licenses to fetuses and stuff like that. I mean, just ludicrous stuff to go say, oh, this is a person, passing laws to say this is two murders.
Yeah.
I mean, so many things, because really what they're doing is trying to build a foundation to try to attack Roe v. Wade.
Absolutely.
And this is really the exact same thing. And again, this is turning a woman, a dead woman, into basically a heat lamp at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Forcing her to keep her alive for, again, a child, which is also dead.
Yeah.
And yes, when you're dead, you can't care. I don't care what happens to my body when I'm dead, except for, I can't because I'm dead. But while I'm alive, I do care what happens to my corpse, because there are other people left behind who this will affect.
Yeah, see, okay, so we have, this is a bit Hellstrom's Hive for me. I mean, Frank Herbert, a bit of a reference there, yeah. I've had this conversation with a few people this week, and it's really interesting to me how the divide goes down. I don't care about dead bodies. I told Becky, me and Becky were talking about this, and then I turned to Becky and I said, when I die, if I'm brain dead, I'm brain dead and I'm gone. You can do whatever you like with my body, for whatever reason. Research, transplantation, entertainment, fertilizer. I don't really care. If it amuses you to keep machines on my body, keeping my body going around, then go ahead and do it, because I'm not there anymore. That's not a body. That's a bag of amino acids and rot at that point. And so at this point, it seems like, since it's not a person anymore, it's a corpse, and it's basically, it goes from a proper noun to a noun, it should really fall back on the next of kin as to what should happen with the body in that case. That seems really cut and dried to me. But my body is not me. When my brain dies, I'm gone. My body is the only piece of real estate I can't leave. And so, you know, that's what dead is. I'm an atheist. I don't believe in an afterlife. I don't believe that my soul goes anywhere. I don't believe I have a soul. So when I'm dead, I'm gone. I'm not. I no longer exist. So my body doesn't mean anything to me anymore. Nothing means anything to me anymore. Meaning doesn't have meaning to me anymore. I understand that if other people have, have interest in wanting their body to, something had to happen to their body, that's different. But for me, I don't care.
Oh, I get that. And I agree, because, again, I don't believe in an afterlife either. But this is the place where I think we may differ or diverge slightly, even if it's only semantics.
Okay.
Is that I do care what happens to my body, only in the sense, well, now while I'm alive, while I'm dead, I can't care what happens to my body when I'm dead. I can't care about anything. Is the fact that there are these live bodies that are left behind who do care about me when I'm alive, and this will have an emotional impact on them. And I like, say, for instance, what if I wanted to, say, give my body to a group of cannibals?
Right.
I can't care about that, but there's a lot of live people who could be very disturbed by that. And there's another fact, too, is I also care about what my legacy is, that my dead body can be used in a way that can undermine things I cared about when I'm alive. And even though I don't care about things when I'm dead, I care about things that I'm alive now, and I include that in caring about things that happen after I die.
See, I think somebody using my corpse to undermine my legacy would actually help establish my legacy. I think it would be funny if somebody were to dig up my corpse and excommunicate me, or put me on tour as an atheist, you know, ex-atheist minister, and like totally get all weekend at Bernie's with me.
I would love mine, that. Sam.
Yeah. I get that, but I'm talking about like funerals and stuff. That somebody could use my funeral as a way to sell Jesus to a bunch of people. I don't want that, because I don't want people selling Jesus to people like that, especially using me, whether I'm alive or dead.
Right.
Yeah. I totally get what you guys are saying about the people who are kind of left behind to deal with the aftermath of somebody's death. And that's the part that I find even more disturbing in this particular situation than the Trojan horse aspect, which I do find pretty disturbing. But apparently nobody cares about this poor woman's husband.
Yeah.
This man
walks in, or her other child.
Yeah. This man walks in, finds his wife dead, finds out that the child she was carrying, which they were hoping to add to their family, also dead.
Yeah.
And she becomes like, you know, she and their child, both of which he's now grieving for, become like these weird pawns in this creepy political religious debate. It's just awful to do to this family, and it just really is inhuman.
And here's the big thing here, is that this is the first time we're really hearing about this, but we have two different social forces at work, which is really going to change the game. The first one is the advance of medical technology. We're able to keep meat a longer time. You know, we figure out how the body works, medical technology advances, maybe you're brain dead, they figure out how to keep the body going longer. That's going to be that's just the way things are going to go. The other side of this is the Catholic takeover of hospitals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we are going to be seeing this again and again and again. This is not the last time we've heard of this.
Yeah, we've talked about the Catholic takeover of hospitals before. It is a real serious looming problem that people really need to start paying attention to. And hopefully, I hope this case, if anything good comes out of this, I hope that people start considering that.
It seems like the reason they took the body off life support is because there was problems with the kid. Now, if the Catholic Church, you know, was the only game in town as far as medical stuff goes, do you think they would give up even then, or do you think they would force this corpse to give birth to another potentially brain dead corpse?
They've done this before.
Yeah.
They did this in Ireland, and they killed a woman.
Yeah.
We can't pretend that this hasn't happened.
No, that's different, because that was worse, because that was somebody who was alive and conscious and thinking.
But one of the stories... Oh, I know that too, but they also said during another story talking about the Catholic takeover of hospitals, there was a situation where a woman was forced to carry a stillborn fetus to term.
Yeah.
And you really think about, what are the psychological aftermath, the fallout of knowing there's a dead baby in you and no one will take it out, that you can't just get over the miscarriage and start the healing process, and drag it out for several months.
Doesn't matter. Women don't have feelings. They're just incubators for fetuses. I'm sorry, not fetuses. Little precious babies.
And this is the garbage that they have, because they make all this noise about caring about human dignity, but this really shows that they don't.
No.
They care about their rules.
Yeah.
They care about adherence and obedience to those rules. They couldn't give a crap about any of the people involved.
No. They don't give a crap about any of the people involved. Because the only people involved are family. You know, the stuff that they're keeping attached to machines, that's not people anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But you'd be surprised, to go back to the philosophical thing for a moment, you'd be surprised at how many people in the atheism community disagree with me. I probably had this conversation...
About this being a person still?
Yeah, five or six times, or saying that here, what I got a couple times was, this is a woman's rights issue. And I'm like, okay, the part where the Trojan horse part is definitely a woman's rights issue. This is another situation where I would be totally against laws like this, because it's a Trojan horse for something bigger, and it's about Christian ideology, you know, being part of American law. But I don't know that if it's a woman's rights thing because there's no woman involved anymore.
Yeah, I think the way it involves women's rights is that potential for it to affect women who are clearly, obviously, legally, yeah, and in every other way alive. Yeah. There is the potential there. There's a corner of this that is women's rights. But no, for the most part, this is all about the rights of that husband who had to go through this extreme trauma of having this happen to his wife and then not being able to just move on from this, or not, I mean, not that he can move on immediately, but you know, to start grieving and to not have his own grief treated with dignity and respect is really just monstrous. It's monstrous.
It's hard enough to have a spouse die. That's hard. It's hard to have a loved one die. It's harder to have that death drag out for month and month and month and month that you can't get to the point they're gone now, because that death is, it's like pulling a piece of duct tape off your arm really slowly.
Yeah, and this is not an unknown thing. Stories like this and processes like this, they extend the grieving time. They make it worse. And they totally, now he's going to have to, her husband is going to have to remember this every time he has to go back on the phase of his life. The death of his wife took months, as you said. The death of his wife, you know, some people it's like ripping the Band-Aid off, and this goes, oh man, the more I think about it, the scarier it gets. If I, you know, Kafka-esque, maybe?
Yeah, you are forced to be a thing.
Yeah.
You are a thing now that they believe is owned by the hospital and owned by their church.
So, Becky and I had a really long conversation about this, and this is a really, really oblique segue, but it's something we've never talked about on the show, really, is, yeah, I don't really care what anybody does with my body. You can animate it and go Weekend at Bernie's and put me on tour talking about how atheism is bad. In fact, if I die, you could have, like, religious billboards up at my funeral. You just have everybody poster. I don't really care. I think it would be funny, and I think most of my friends and family would see the irony in it. But then again, there's that whole Alcor thing. You know, maybe I want to get my brain frozen, because maybe I might be able to fix it.
You going all full Walt Disney on you?
Yeah, I might go full Walt. I'll come out and say that right now. I might go full Walt Disney. I might. It seems interesting.
Yeah, the frozen brain under the Matterhorn?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, freezing brains is just not something we can technologically do right now, but I'm not sure that's 100% true anymore, because I have been doing minor research into freezing other proteins from the body, shall we say. That sounds dirtier than I wanted it to, but it's not entirely inaccurate.
Yeah.
But it might be something that we could do someday. If the technology advances to the point where we can, it's like, actually preserve and then, like, reanimate a brain, totally. I would be all about coming back as, like, a future brain and a sexy android. That'd be awesome.
I kind of dig this life thing. And so, again,
I don't think I want to be a Cyberman.
I'm dead. I don't care.
I mean, I'm dead. The dead me doesn't care, but alive me now does care.
Okay.
Like, alive me now cares of whether there's a nuclear war 100 years from now.
All right.
But because I care about the people who live on. I'm not like, right, I got mine. Good luck, folks.
That's not apples to apples, because this is a personal thing. This is about me. And do I think it's going to work? Honestly, probably not. But it's like 9.9999999999. Huge numbers of nines. 10 times negative to 45 or whatever.
Well, I may have just solved your dilemma for you.
What's that?
You can look at it as donating your brain to science. Because if they try freezing your brain, they're doing an experiment to find out what we're capable of doing with freeze and thaw technology.
Yeah.
And you're welcome.
Do I care if there's going to be a nuclear war after I'm dead? Yes. I want people to succeed. I am a humanist, but there's the difference between what happens to civilization and the people who are alive versus what happens to a guy who isn't anymore.
Yeah.
Those are two different things.
But again, the question is, there are a bunch of live people who are affected by what happens to my body, and I care more about them than I do my body.
Yeah, see, I kind of...
I'm with Mike on this one. I do, too.
If I know there are people who love me that if they saw my corpse torn apart by wild dogs, they would be traumatized by that, and I'd rather avoid that trauma.
Right.
As much as I like feeding animals. I don't want that image, because it's not me, but it looks like me, and it's being torn apart by wild dogs, and that image will stick with people.
Right. I guess it's just, you know, it's my body.
I don't want to hurt my loved ones.
I know, but at some point I'd say, it's me. I'm gone.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's like if it's my family, I'd like them to think that, just go with me on this one because this is me. You know, it's about me. I'm dead now. So
well,
this is
why we have the body at a funeral, though.
Right.
Is we want to see that person.
I don't like that.
You know, that's personal taste. I can't make you hold your funeral any way you want, but I think that the live person before they're dead should have some say in it. And you should also care about what the people that are left behind. That's why we have things like life insurance.
Yeah.
Because it's not like...
What does life insurance have to do with this? Life insurance is for the people who are living. It's not for the people who are dead.
So is your body not being torn apart and used like a puppet?
Yeah, I don't think it's the same thing.
I think that you can make as much noise as you want. I know that if your body was used as a marionette after your death, it would bother Becky.
Touché.
I don't think so.
I think it would.
Becky might
you're gonna have a conversation with her after about this, but it would bother her.
You
don't care that it bothers her? Is that what you're saying?
On some level, no.
Good God, this is the most awkward third party to a conversation.
Yeah, I
ever.
Know. You didn't just do
Can
that.
Can we go back
you?
To talking about the seagulls and the crows?
Yeah, let's
this
go back
just
to
talking
about the seagulls and the crows. No, seriously, it's to me, it's about it. I know I have weird ideas about identity, but I want to talk about brain freezing stuff. Where did that go?
I don't know.
Why do you not want to do it?
But to freeze myself?
Yeah.
Because if it gets created as me, you're creating a simulation of me. You're not bringing me back to life without the existence of something like a soul.
Right.
Wait, you don't know that. I mean, you are the neurons in your brain who's to say we wouldn't be able to preserve those so that they just reattach just like they were at the time of death.
You thaw it out and pop it into something. I don't know if it's necessarily me or if it's just me running through the memory of me. It's like a backup copy.
Well, I guess you'll just have to wait and find out.
This is my issue with transhumanism, honestly, if you want to get into that. This is a bigger can of worms, but you could create that digital copy of me now, and it wouldn't be me if it coexists with me at the same time.
But again, why deny the copy of you that opportunity, I guess?
I mean, essentially, there's me, and then there's the Arnold Rimmer me.
Yeah.
That isn't me, and it's just because I died.
That's all the time we got. Post-show is at Doyle's in an hour. Join us there. You can give us a call at 206-420-0997. Go to our website at askanatheist.tv or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Next week, we're interviewing Bill Nye. See you then. Boy, this got personal.